Welcome to the highlights of the Circular Republic Festival, Europe's leading event for advancing the circular economy, uniting corporates, startups, and innovators driving this transformation. We continue the series with a panel about chemistry in circularity. The panelists are Manuel Häusler, founder of Aevoloop, Gerben Meyer, Vice President Global Product Development and Circular Design at Lyondell Bucel, Christian Schiller, founder and CEO of Surplus, Peter Seeberger, founding director of the Max Planck Institute of Colloids and Surfaces. This panel is moderated by Leonard Niemer, founder of Studio Niemer. But before we start, I have an offer for you. If you want to get the actionable one-pager of this conversation, please sign up to the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm.
We are about to rebuild the stage because we're now heading into our next topic, circularity in chemistry. And while we're just still rebuilding here, my pleasure to introduce our speakers. First of all, Manuel Häusler. Manuel, he's the founder and CEO of Aevoloop. You're a material innovator who's producing a planet-proof plastics. Manuel, warm welcome. Good to have you on stage. Your applause, and please take a seat. Then we have Gerben Meyer. Gerben Meyer, he's Vice President for Global Product Development and Circular Design at Lyondell Bucel, one of the top five and big chemical manufacturers globally. And we still have the rearrangement of the water. And then you get your big applause, so we do that very pragmatically. Then we have Christian Schiller. Christian Schiller, he's the founder and CEO of Surplus, a marketplace for recycled plastics. And last but not least, Professor Peter Seeberger. He's the founding director of the CTC, the Center for the Transformation of Chemistry. He's also the managing director at the Max Planck Institute for Colloids and Interfaces. So now the stage is all set. Warm welcome, everybody. First of all, big applause for all of you. Should we start and ask the audience who was at school very good in chemistry? Please raise your hand. Don't be modest. There's one, two. How about you guys here on the panel? Yeah. Christian, me neither. So I had chemistry as well, but I wasn't. Okay, that's good. Because also there, important for us to know when we talk about chemical industry, we're talking about one of the big industries here. Maybe we need to get everybody on board a little bit by starting like, what's the status quo also in the industry? Gerben, maybe you want to give us a glimpse into how you perceive the chemical industry right now.
Thank you. Of course, the chemical industry will be an enabler for lots of products that you use every day. So it's for circular products, it's becoming very, very important. But the current cycle in the industry is very, very difficult. So you probably have to just to open the newspaper to see that the chemical industry as a whole, especially in Europe, is navigating a down cycle, as we call it, but it is going to be a long one, which is making it hard to invest in an industry that's very capital intensive. So we need hundreds of billions to build the capacity for circular products, which we need latest when the packaging waste regulation kicks into effect. So that's something that we navigate. Lyondell Bucel is investing hundreds of millions in that topic on every side, mechanical, chemical, bio-based. So we are investing heavily, but it's not easy at the moment. It's hard.
Did you share that perspective from Gerben on the industry in general?
Most certainly. I mean, the chemical industry is often regarded as the industry of industries. So if you look around, I think there is a number like 95% of all industrial products contain at least one step involving chemistry. So it means if we cut out chemistry in this room, we would all be sitting on the floor naked. So I think this is quite important to understand. Without chemistry, there is no industry. And that's why I share that.
And then, I mean, one big field within chemistry is plastics. And just to throw out some numbers, we have more than 400 million tons of plastics produced annually right now. But projections are even double and triple by the end of the century. So the trajectory is going steep onward. But it's not only about plastics, but, I mean, chemical appliances and use cases much broader. Peter Seeberger.
Well, you heard this morning about cars. if you think about a car that's basically full of chemistry, batteries, tires, paint, all chemistry. So I think without chemistry, there would be no other industry in Germany that we remembered. And of course, many of you said you weren't good in school, but without chemistry, you wouldn't have automotive industry, none of these other industries would exist. At the same time, we got to understand that if you want to have a chemical industry in Germany in the future, we have to totally change the way of how we do it. We got to go to a circular economy. We got to get away from the energy-intensive ways we do it right now. And we got to start to change the inputs away from fossil fuel-based inputs, oil, gas, and coal, into recycling and into renewables.
So very big importance and significance of the chemical industry, but then under pressure from economic reasons, environmental reasons. Christian, how do you see that need for that transformation then happening?
Well, I think it's pretty obvious if you see that the market itself of the chemical products is leading to a leakage, especially in the space of plastics, into the environment, where clearly the market doesn't solve the problem. Right. Mm-hmm. So if this is the case, then that means how can we respond if there clearly are not the business conditions for capitalistic organizations, be that corporates or smaller companies, that they would solve this problem automatically, right? So I think we have seen it for years now where we try to limit the impacts or negative impacts, externalities of the chemical industries and the environment, but we just see that along with what you said, the scaling of the production, we also see the scaling of plastic waste leakage in the environment. To give you just one shocking figure, I think we are approaching something between 10 to 15 million tons of plastic waste entering the oceans every year, with yet unknown consequences, not only to animal life, but also human life. You know, the science and research is very early stage of what plastic in our bodies actually can do. Yeah, so this is something that clearly the market hasn't solved and doesn't seem to solve. So then the question for our panel, and I think everybody who has a genuine interest in how can we make the chemical industry more sustainable, we have to ask, under which condition can we create, which conditions are necessary that we can stop those harmful externalities, because we all agree that chemical products are super useful and necessary, so we're not going to be having a conversation around to do away with those products. And one more sentence then, just maybe as a kickoff for that. I really liked in the National Circular Economy Strategy for Plastics that Germany has passed in December, this idea of a new business model, what they call a circularity provider for carbon. Yeah, that you become a service provider for keeping carbon in the loop. You know this from the automotive industry that maybe is in their transformation process already maybe 10, 15 years ahead of the chemical industry. And they said, maybe we should move away from my main role is to produce virgin polymers and pump it into the market. Maybe my main role should be that carbon is so valuable that we should create business models that I, as a beginning of the chain, have an interest to keep it in the loop for as long as possible. Circularity provider of carbon. That's sort of as a kickoff maybe to where and how can we then create those conditions that this becomes a business case for every one of us involved here.
Yeah, for sure, because the business case is key. And given that's what you said now with the economic crisis, so that's a little bit under pressure. A little bit is probably underestimated. That's really under pressure. Is maybe that aspect of supply chain resilience, resource scarcity that we addressed this morning also briefly, maybe then becoming a driving force for this transformation? Or where's this innovation transformation coming from?
We as an industry have to be more efficient in the economy of scale. So, I mean, LyondellBasell will produce and market 2 million tons by 2030. That's a long way. We did it last year, 200,000. That means a factor 5 in 5 years. That's a massive challenge, which requires massive innovation, efficiency to recycle products, assure that it is collected in an efficient way, decontaminated, and assure that it is a high-quality product back to the consumer. I think I'm truly convinced many packaging systems benefit from plastics. Yeah, this is probably the most low-carbon way to package a material.
Of course.
We just have to develop by design packaging that is a monomaterial, that is easy collected, doesn't end up in the environment, it's efficiently decontaminated and go back to the into the value chain. That is what we need to develop. It's still it's inefficient because the collection rates are low, so that means, but it's probably also due to the lack of collection systems and efficient and lack of economy of scale. It needs to be larger. Consumers have a hard time paying more for a circular product compared to a virgin one. That's the topic. That means we need to be more efficient. It's economy of scale that drives it.
So there's a need for a lot of innovation in the field. On the one hand side, maybe again to the material innovations, Peter Seeberger, do you see that really happening? Or is the industry at large proceeding with business as usual?
So I think we have two choices. Yep. Choice number one, we're going to innovate and we're going to be more efficient based on things we can get here. And we retain chemical industry here, or we don't do that and we can buy everything from China or India. Those were two choices. And if you get rid of the chemical industry, then I think we have a fundamental problem to our entire society. So I think we have a tremendous chance right now because of the energy situation, because of the crises, multiple crises. We have a chance now that we have to innovate. We will innovate, and I think that will create new business models. Mm-hmm. So I see this actually as a real chance that we have to take now. There are outfits such as our center. The German government just gave us 1.2 billion euros, 1.2 billion euros, a lot of money to do exactly that. But yeah. The message is clear. Not one institute can do this alone. Not Max Planck Institute, not Center of Transformation of Chemistry. This is a global thing. It's between industry and academia. We have 180 companies today doing this together. But I think we got to look at a time of about 30 to 40 years. So a real generational task to get this done, but we got to get it started now.
So, I mean, just to emphasize on this, capital intense, right? This is number one. We need a lot of money, and that needs to come from somewhere. The innovators need a lot of money. Also, Manuel, you're one of the innovators developing, hopefully, new material out there. Maybe tell us a little bit about that as a driving source for innovation.
Yeah, so maybe first a short explanation what we do as a startup. So we look at plastics and say, essentially on a molecular level, these are the same materials for decades now. So they have been developed in the 50s and 60s, and of course there has been innovation ever since then, but it has been incremental, so the fundamental molecular design has never been touched again on a fundamental level, and we exactly do that. So it's quite disruptive. We say, okay, we have new standards for materials these days. We want them to be biodegradable so we don't end up eating microplastics all the time. And of course, we want to create true closed loops. And we're limited by the materials we have today. Simply, they were never designed for it. We designed them. And as you can imagine, that's quite disruptive. And establishing something like that took us 60, 70 years for the old materials. So now the question is, when do we start with the next generation, so to say? And we're saying, yeah, ideally 10 years ago, 20 years ago, but then I was too young to do that. Now I'm old enough, and we start today. And we hope this is now the start of a new generation of materials that also gets its chance on the market.
Because I think that's interesting for all of us just to let that sink in. I mean, plastics, as you said, has only been around 60, 70 almost 80 years by now, so not forever. I mean, we're just talking about a few decades if we want. So time for new next generation of materials?
I mean, you're speaking of time, and I think that's a really crucial point. We heard about the capital needs and the innovators, but my main concern when I look at the transformation of chemistry is that today investments are being made in linear assets at a scale where we know for 30, 40 years we're locking ourselves in still in linear business models. Just, I mean, industry news, there was just Saudi Aramco announced a new steam cracker with an output, annual output of 1.8 million tons of ethylene. So this is going to be have to be used because those assets, as you know better than me, will have to run for years to be basically profitable for those, you know. So right now we have a lot of discussion, and I don't think we have really an Erkenntnis problem, we say in German, like a recognizing the problem. We know the conditions are not right for circularity yet. We have many innovators ready. But at the same time, as you also mentioned in the beginning, we are on a path for scaling still the use of virgin plastics.
Existing systems.
These assets are being invested in as we speak. Yep. And just like with nuclear energy, there's a certain clear interest from shareholder value then to, hey, I don't want my assets to be stranded. And then if a regulator comes around and says, wait a minute, your chemical industry, now in 5 years from now, you should have at least 25% recycled content. That puts me under a lot of pressure because at the same time, I want to make sure that the ultimate invest or the initial invest I made in 2025 in my steam cracker should also amortize. I want to be profitable there, right? You say you have to make money. So that is my main concern, that I think it's not 100% genuine, this discussion. When I look at what investments are being made right now, and how that puts us onto a dependency path with a lot of linearity locked in. And I think, and I'm just arguing here, that we could do so much more if the conditions were already ready. Because right now the chemical industry is investing in a linear future mostly, because those 400, 600, 800 million tons that you mentioned, that means we have to massively vamp up still the production of virgin plastics.
You can tell Gavin already wants to jump in. So okay.
Yeah, I need to object here. We have just started up a facility that collects and sorts the household waste for 1.2 million consumers in Germany. Just started up. So I don't think you can stay.
How many tons is that, if I may ask? How many tons are we?
That is 120,000 tons of household plastic waste.
So that's
collected. That's a lot of material. We need many more. But I don't think you can make the statement that the chemical industry is just investing in a linear way. Absolutely not true.
Not just, but massive investments are being made in linear.
Not in Europe. I think in the next couple of years you will see massive amounts of crackers being shut down in Europe because there is a lack of economical environment. Yeah,
I think the discussion that's going on is interesting because it shows exactly Europe versus the rest of the world.
Interesting.
You look at Leuna, where you just put 1.4 billion UPM into the bio-based plastics manufacturing. That can be done better, probably, but I think we are going slowly in the right direction.
I mean, and that's super important, right? We're talking about a global situation that we're facing. So maybe the situation in Europe is different. There's a different pressure on Europe. There's a lot of heavy investment going on in other parts of the world. That's, Christian, just your point that you emphasized. So there is this trajectory of a linear future that is going on. And maybe that's also here to be a little bit provocative on that one, and feel free to agree, disagree, that when we talk about a circular economy world, there is still a very linear world outside that is not waiting for us, right? And just doing business as usual. And maybe that could be one field, as you emphasized, where this is happening. Still coming back maybe also to the material innovations and the innovation pressure, the money side that is needed. Again, fundamental investments. Peter Seeberg, I mean, you got a lot of funding for your center, but do you see that money is channeled in the right way towards a circular transformation of the chemistry industry?
I think 1.2 billion sounds like a lot of money, but it's a drop in a bucket. Yeah. And that is the sad part, right? I think what we can be as a federally funded center, we can be an ignition point, a starting point to ignite chemical innovation, and that's happening. But I think in Germany are really, really good in getting this innovation done. But the issue is, from once we finish innovation, to actually make this and bring the power on the road and make the companies go. So I started 10 startup companies in the space of vaccines and in drugs, and that's also expensive, but less expensive than in chemistry. Mm-hmm. So I think in Germany, what we really need to foster, and that's what we're trying to do with CTC, to make sure that as people make discoveries, we then move that forward. It actually means you've got to get business people involved, you've got to get money involved. Venture money, I think that's something where we see, I think, increased interest in Europe, and we have to have the money to then bring this. And some will fail, but I think a lot of them will work, but that is what we have to have in Germany, because otherwise we make inventions and people in the United States, other places, then make a business out of that. I think we got to keep a business here.
Last night we had a discussion with one of the material innovators, and we talked about the different models, and he was like, oh, maybe the venture capital model is not the right way, again, because of the very long pathways. Maybe a little bit on that discussion again, where could the money come from? Is that venture capital money? Is that the big corporations that need to invest?
I mean, definitely we need... there are some big regulations coming up from Brussels, and I think these are important. You need a stable regulations from Brussels, especially, that companies can invest in these large-scale efficiency. If there is doubt on the business model that maybe the regulation will change or something in Brussels will change, there is doubt, people will not invest, and that will be a problem because the capacity will be needed. So it's a stable regulation from Brussels is absolutely crucial. Yeah? Of course, having some incentives for circularity, that the business model works.
That the business model works and the pricing. I mean, that's fundamental, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe just one point to the regulations. I mean, as a startup aiming for sustainable solutions, we could say, let's just hope for the commission to come up with really tough regulations and then we can make a margin out of that. Mm-hmm. We don't do that at all. We say, if it comes, okay, good for us. But actually, it's so hard to plan with the regulation at the moment because it's so ill-defined and you don't know if they just flip it around basically next year, so that we say, okay, it has to work without the regulations. So basically, innovation has to be profitable on its own. So a new material has to solve a technical issue we have today. That's a very honest approach, very honest competition to what's out there, and I think this is the only way. It's tough, but then it's robust and it works.
Let's get a little bit into that discussion of the price point, because I know we had also the discussion before, can these material innovations, recycled materials, be cheaper than virgin fossil fuel-based materials out there?
Yeah.
Because that's what you say it needs to be. It's kind of coming from the market, not through regulations. Is that still one of the big elephants in the room?
I personally think so, because I mean, look where we are in Germany, right? I mean, we have the introduction of the waste collection system under Klaus Töpfer, the former Minister of the Environment. It's like, what, 30, 35 years ago? And that started really the household collection, the yellow bag system, for some, probably most of you know. And still the circularity rate of plastics, where we celebrate ourselves in Germany as like being the world's leader or Europe's leader in plastic recycling, is super low. If you look into the share of post-consumer recycled plastic and plastic processing in Germany from the yellow bag, we're talking definitely below 10%. And that's after 35 years of collecting the waste and maybe some underinvestments in the recycling space, because quite clearly, which investor invests in the market when you can see I'm competing here against super cheap virgin prices? Nobody is forced to use recycled. Recycled also has a stigma as being, it's kind of dirty, it's not the same, right? And so it should even be cheaper than virgin, because ask yourself, would you be willing to buy a used car for a higher price than a new car? No, nobody does that. And that's exactly why it's so essential that we not only create what often in this discussion is called a level playing field to circularity. Yeah. I actually argue that we need an unlevel playing field in favor of circularity, because quite frankly, the plastic value chain, chemical value chain had a head start of 70 years, we just said, where you've been extremely efficient in optimizing the production, the refining of crude oil into massively abundantly available plastics. That's why supply chains globally hold, and we can sit here not naked, as you said, Manu. That's great, fantastic. And I think the really huge task now for all of us is how can we create now the unlevel playing field in favor of circularity, that massive investments and innovators go into this space and not just continue going into the old path, and then basically we end up in more and more business as usual cases. And that's my biggest concern, that we just don't have that much time left to really fix this thing that ultimately will be too slow to stop more of the crisis.
But maybe a brief audience participation. You probably all go to and you recycle your batteries, right? You bring them back, you recycle them. There's lithium in there. Lithium is usually made in Chile or in China. How much of that do you think we actually recycle? I'm going to make it short. It's exactly 0%. So all three, you bring your batteries back, that stuff is burned and it's wasted. So I think that is an example of where we have everything in place, we could recycle it, but we don't do it. We don't do it because economically it doesn't make any sense right now, because it's cheaper to take the stuff that comes out of mines from very far away around the globe than it is to actually recycle it. Technically, it could probably be done. It could probably be done better. So it's not just plastics. Mm-hmm. It's many other chemicals. And that's something you should always keep in mind. That plastics is an obvious thing, but many, many other things also exist.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we talk about a circular economy, that needs to be applied in all areas of life, ideally, right? Just look around. And then we're talking about more complicated areas as well. Plastics still being relatively easy. I'm being provocative here, but there's so much more that would need to go back into some sort of loops. Christian, you said recycling comes somehow with a stigma. It's interesting also because recycling for sure is one pillar of a circular economy, right? There's way more, but it is still a fundamentally important pillar of a functioning circular economy. And then we're now in a situation where that is somehow stigmatized as something bad. Gavin, how do you perceive this one?
We'll have to stimulate demand. I totally agree. If you would force recycled content mandates, it's coming too slow at 2030. It's going rampant. If you would have that earlier and have that steeper, the companies will be forced to invent more efficient technology, do that at scale, and all that kind of thing. It's a lot of technology. We have been very inefficient to scale these technologies. The quality is too poor, and economy of scale doesn't work. So if you work on that, I think we're going in the right direction. It's a bit slow. I agree.
We could dive a little bit more into the recycling topic to learn also about the different approaches here. Just look into the audience. If there's any urgent questions and good questions, feel free, raise your hand. There's one over there, and you'll get a microphone in a second. Can we get a microphone for the gentleman? Not yet. It's coming. All right, but again, yeah, we're going to dive a little spoiler into recycling a little bit more. Okay. That's your applause.
I was not only good in chemistry, I also studied, so my question is a little bit nerdy. My question is your personal point of view. Do you want to have the molecules live long, that they can be recycled very often times, or do you prefer that they are biodegradable, that they get out of the environment quite fast? Mm-hmm. So when we talked about the plastic in the ocean, it could make sense to have molecules which are gone more faster, so within 1 or 2 years. But on the other hand, we can't recycle them over 10 or 15 years when they are gone so fast. What's your personal point of view? How long a molecule?
To anybody specific, you can choose one. Who do you want? You have to choose. No, and maybe just to add one thing, and then we go to the question. I mean, there's these two cycles in the circular economy, right? The biological cycle and the technological cycle. So what you're saying is, which one should you prefer? We have that discussion in the new materials field. Not everybody wants to strive for biodegradability, but rather have it in the technological cycle.
Yeah, maybe I can jump in. Short answer, we need both. We need all of that. We need performance, we need degradability, we need recyclability, and we need low prices. That's the only combination that will work on the long term. Think about plastics. So you all heard of microplastics. I don't have one with me, but if you hold a credit card, that's roughly 5 grams, you consume that every single week. Now we can argue it ends up in our brains, it ends up in our gut. Hopefully it will make us smarter. I think it will not be the case. Studies yet to be shown. But this is an issue. And you can recycle as much as you want with non-degradable materials. They will always generate microplastics. So we have to decide, are we just okay with that? Then we can keep on doing that. Or we really stop it today at least. I mean, there are humongous amounts of microplastics out there already. But at least we could stop doing that today, right? And I think that's the only way.
Maybe one thing to add, and also want to hear your opinion, it really depends on the use case of the product, what it is. And we have one example up there, don't want to do any advertising, but it is a sock hanger. Now people were like, what's a sock hanger? Well, that's the thing where you hang socks in a store. That's so small that if you will never put this back into the technological cycle because there will be no way to collect it. So then hopefully you want this to be biodegradable. So does the size of a product, very simplified, also matter where this ends up in the chain? Because collecting small items for recycling is more difficult than bigger items, low-value items, less incentives than higher-value items. Gem, how do you perceive this?
I mean, design for circularity is in many ways very important. Design it that it doesn't end up, that doesn't create microplastics. We are doing research on that. How can you avoid that? But also, how can you improve collection efficiency in collecting and sorting and decontamination? Yeah, many products that you buy in the supermarkets are terrible multi-layer structures composed of all kinds of different materials, almost impossible to recycle. The only thing you can do is almost burn it. So that's horrible. We need to work on that. But that's functionality of the product. Biodegradable is fantastic, probably, but what about the functionality? Does it still have the same performance? It's tough. It's very difficult. Okay. Some application is probably the best solution. I agree.
Does it have to have the same properties as well? Does it have it? Does it have to have it? Thank you very much. A very good question. Do we have another question from the audience? That was not too nerdy, so maybe on the recycling part, and we have just 2 or 3 minutes left. Also, there are quite a few different approaches out there. How do you perceive the field right now? And also, Gavin, maybe back to you. You're investing a lot of money into this. Tell us a little bit about this.
So, we as a company, we want to produce and market 2 million tons by 2030. That means a factor of 5 compared to what we produced last year. That's global, yes, not just in Europe. We believe in the business model that can generate a positive return. We believe that this is possible. It is just that the current business cycle is very tough to invest in that. It will require massive amounts of money, but we are doing that. We have invested several hundred millions in a company in a facility here in Germany, right here around the corner. But we'll have to do much more. Yeah. So it's a challenge. We'll get there.
We'll get there. We talked about the long time horizon. Maybe a spontaneous, difficult question. Are you ready for this? You can only answer yes.
Yes or no? What?
Yes or no? No, you can only answer yes. Okay. So maybe the chemical industry in 2050. What would you think, Peter, if you have a wish for it?
The chemical industry, I think, will still exist in Germany. It will be large. It will be in large parts already circular. Some things will be much harder. It'll take longer. But I have high hopes it's going to happen, because if it doesn't happen, we have a real issue here.
You have a wish for 2050?
Yeah, fully circular chemical industry, at least within Europe. I think that's the only way to succeed on a global level.
And Evolut, one of the big five players globally.
Of course.
Of course. Christian?
Yeah, I would hope Germany, Europe defines the chemical industry new in a way that they're a circular carbon industry. And in that, they really built into their own business model to keep the carbon as long in the cycle with the least ecological footprint as possible for as long as possible to the best prices.
Okay, one final wish.
We have a target to be net zero by 2050. We'll get there.
All right. Thank you very much to all of you for this great panel, sharing all the insights into a heavy topic, a big industry. So big round of applause for all of you. Thank you very much.
This was another episode in our series about the Circular Republic Festival 2025. If you want to get the actionable one-pager about this conversation, please sign up to the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Let's drive a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.